Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into a really compelling and, frankly, quite unsettling case. Commonwealth v. King from 1987 out of Massachusetts. The core question we're wrestling with is this. At what point does misconduct by law enforcement become so extreme that a court should throw out a criminal case even if the person looks, well, guilty?
It's a fundamental tension in our legal system, isn't it? We all want criminals held accountable, but what happens when the very people we task with upholding the law engage in seriously questionable behavior? This case really throws that into sharp relief.
Absolutely, because on the surface, the facts seem straightforward. Christopher King was found in possession of firearms.
Right. Seems simple.
Case closed, right. Okay. Except there's a crucial layer here. While all that was unfolding, an informant named Alan Berube, hoping to get a lighter sentence himself, managed to infiltrate King's circle.
Okay.
And here's where it gets really interesting. Berube, working in concert with the police, actually attempted to secretly record King's private conversations with his own attorneys.
Whoa, hold on. With his attorneys?
Yes, during a court hearing.
That immediately sets off alarm bells for anyone familiar with the legal landscape. The attorney-client privilege, which, as you know, is the bedrock principle, that communications between a lawyer and their client are confidential, protected.
Exactly.
That's absolutely fundamental. The idea that law enforcement would even try to breach that is deeply troubling.
You're absolutely right. And the prosecution's response to this attempted recording, they claim they had no knowledge whatsoever that this tactic was being employed by the state police task force.
Oh, really? They distanced themselves?
Completely. Their main argument essentially boiled down to this. Look, King was caught red-handed with the guns, so ultimately no real harm was done.
Ah, the no harm, no foul argument, even with such serious misconduct attempted.
Precisely. And this sets up the central conflict we're diving into. Should the apparent guilt of a defendant excuse or somehow negate seriously problematic actions by law enforcement?
It forces us to really consider the underlying purpose of our justice system. Is it solely about securing convictions no matter what? Or is it equally about ensuring a fair and just process and actively deterring overreach by the state?
Yeah.
This case highlights that inherent conflict beautifully, or perhaps more accurately, disturbingly.
Okay, so the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court had to grapple with this attempted intrusion into the attorney-client privilege. Yeah. What were the key legal questions they were, trying to answer?
Well, at its core, the court was trying to determine if the police misconduct, this attempted recording of privileged attorney-client communications, was so egregious that the indictments against King should be dismissed.
Right.
And importantly, they were considering this even without concrete proof that King's defense was actually harmed by this attempted eavesdropping.
So it wasn't just about whether King was factually guilty of the gun charges, but about the fundamental integrity of the legal process itself. That seems like a crucial distinction.
Precisely. The court had to consider whether allowing the prosecution to move forward under these circumstances would send the wrong message, potentially emboldening law enforcement to use similar tactics in future cases.
Mm-hmm.
It's a question of both fundamental fairness to the individual defendant and the overall health and credibility of the judicial system.
So what did the court ultimately decide? Can you walk us through their main reasoning?
The majority of the court ultimately upheld the trial judge's decision not to dismiss the indictments. Their reasoning largely rested on the principle that dismissal of indictments is an extremely drastic remedy.
Like a last resort.
Exactly. They stated that it should only be used in situations where the misconduct has caused what they termed irreparable harm to the possibility of the defendant receiving a fair trial.
And in King's case, they didn't believe this irreparable harm threshold was met.
That's correct. The majority emphasized two primary points in their analysis. First, they pointed out that King was, in their words, caught red-handed with the firearms.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
They essentially concluded that he didn't have a strong or viable defense to those charges in the first place. Second, they highlighted the fact that the prosecutors themselves were not directly involved in the attempt to record the attorney-client conversations.
Ah, okay.
The misconduct was attributed specifically to the state police task force.
Okay, so the distinction between misconduct by the police versus misconduct directly by the prosecution was significant in their decision-making.
Absolutely. The court seemed far more inclined to impose the severe sanction of dismissal if the prosecution itself had engaged in such egregious conduct, because the prosecutors claimed they were unaware.
Right. Plausible deniability, perhaps.
The court appeared more reluctant to throw out the case.
Yeah.
They also emphasize that the public has a significant interest in seeing crimes prosecuted, and that this interest outweighed the need for deterrence in this particular instance, especially since no actual prejudice to King's defense was definitively proven.
That's a really interesting balancing act the court had to perform, but I know there was a strong dissenting opinion in this case. What was Justice Abrams' perspective on all of this?
Oh, yes. Justice Abrams offered a very powerful dissenting opinion, arguing quite vehemently that the deliberate attempt to intrude upon the attorney-client privilege was so fundamentally wrong.
Just the attempt itself.
Yes, that it warranted dismissal of the indictments, regardless of whether King could definitively prove specific prejudice in his particular case. She argued that the police action constituted a deliberate attack on the very foundation of the attorney-client relationship.
Wow.
And that allowing the case to proceed essentially condoned this type of behavior.
She really viewed it as a matter of protecting the integrity of the entire judicial system, didn't she?
Exactly. Her concern was that tolerating such a blatant violation would erode public trust in the fairness of the entire legal process. She used some very strong language in her dissent, describing the police conduct as intolerably exploitive and coercive.
Strong words indeed.
And as a deliberate and intentional attack on the relationship between the defendant and his counsel. For Justice Abrams, the very nature of the misconduct was so egregious that it demanded a strong response to deter future violations, even if the defendant in this specific instance appeared to have a weak defense to the underlying gun charges.
So what are the key legal principles that we can really take away from this Commonwealth v. King decision? What's the sort of the headline for law students?
Well, the majority opinion really reinforces the principle that dismissal of indictments is an extraordinary and very rare remedy. The bar for it is set quite high.
Okay.
The court essentially laid out a kind of test where dismissal typically requires either clearly demonstrated prejudice to the defendant, meaning the misconduct actually harmed their ability to present a defense or receive a fair trial, or a substantial and credible threat of such prejudice occurring.
So actual harm or a really serious threat of it.
Right. They also made it clear that they would balance the public's significant interest in seeing crimes prosecuted against the crucial need to deter future misconduct by law enforcement. And as we've discussed, the involvement of the prosecution in the misconduct is a relevant factor that the court will consider in that balancing act.
And the dissenting opinion from Justice Abrams provides a really important counterpoint, emphasizing the idea that certain types of conduct are so inherently damaging to the system itself.
Yes, systemically damaging.
That they demand a strong response from the courts, even in the absence of concrete proof of direct prejudice in that specific case.
Precisely. The dissent really pushes back against the idea that the ends might justify the means, even if those means don't ultimately alter the outcome for this particular defendant. It raises a fundamental question. Are there certain lines that, once crossed by law enforcement, necessitate a systemic response to protect the very rule of law itself?
This naturally leads us to consider some really interesting hypothetical scenarios, doesn't it? For example, what if Berube had actually succeeded in recording those attorney-client conversations? Do you think that would have shifted the majority's analysis?
It's highly probable. While the majority placed significant emphasis on the lack of actual prejudice in King's case, the successful recording of privileged communications would arguably constitute a much more concrete and direct intrusion.
Much harder to ignore.
Definitely. An intrusion into King's defense strategy and his relationship with his attorney. That might very well have tipped the scales toward a finding of a substantial threat of prejudice, even if the underlying facts related to the gun possession remained exactly the same.
Or what if, hypothetically, Christopher King had a really strong and viable defense to the gun charges? Say he argued he didn't know the guns were there or they weren't his. Do you think the court would have been more inclined to find prejudice in the attempted recording then?
That's a great point. The court actually subtly hints at that possibility in their ruling. They specifically mentioned that King had no viable defense to the gun charges.
Ah, so they did note that explicitly.
Yes, which strongly suggests that in a case where the defendant did have a substantial defense, an attempt by law enforcement to undermine the attorney-client privilege through such egregious means might be viewed as causing more significant prejudice.
Right, because then the misconduct could actually affect the outcome.
Exactly. It increases the likelihood of the court considering dismissal as an appropriate remedy in that scenario.
It's also important to remember, as majority did point out in their decision, that their ruling wasn't necessarily condoning the underlying police misconduct.
No, they were careful about that.
They simply didn't believe that dismissing the indictment was the appropriate legal remedy in this particular factual situation. They did suggest that other avenues for addressing the misconduct existed, such as suppressing any evidence that might have been obtained as a result of the misconduct.
Right, exclusion.
Or pursuing disciplinary actions against the officers involved.
Exactly. The majority was trying to strike a balance, acknowledging the seriousness of the police actions, while also upholding what they saw as the significant public interest in prosecuting what appeared to be a relatively straightforward case of illegal firearm possession.
But the dissent.
The dissent, however, clearly felt that the balance struck by the majority tipped too far in favor of prosecution, at the expense of effectively deterring truly unacceptable law enforcement tactics that undermine fundamental constitutional rights.
So the big takeaway for anyone following this case, especially, say, law students studying criminal procedure, is that courts are extremely hesitant to dismiss criminal indictments.
Extremely.
It's really viewed as a last resort, a nuclear option in the legal arsenal. They will generally only take that step if there is clear and convincing evidence that the misconduct directly and irreparably harmed the defendant's ability to receive a fair trial.
Whoa.
Or if the prosecution's own integrity has been severely and demonstrably compromised.
But as Justice Abrams so powerfully reminds us in her dissent, the absence of such a strong consequence for egregious police overreach can have a really corrosive effect on the entire justice system.
Yeah.
It raises a fundamental question for you, the listener, to consider. If law enforcement agencies can engage in tactics that strike at the very heart of constitutional rights, like the right to confidential communication with your attorney without facing the ultimate sanction of a dismissed case, what safeguards truly exist to prevent future misconduct and ensure the continued integrity of our legal system?
That's a really powerful and thought-provoking point to end on. Considering that the court in Commonwealth v. King acknowledged the police misconduct was egregious, but still upheld the conviction, where do you think the line should be drawn? Between ensuring justice for potential crimes and holding law enforcement fully accountable for overreach, especially when that overreach directly targets the fundamental right to counsel? And is that caught red-handed argument always a sufficient justification to negate the impact of serious misconduct? It's definitely something to keep mulling over long after this deep dive. Thanks for exploring this complex case with us today.
Thank you. Always interesting.
We'll catch you next time.